get started here this morning, I would like to give a huge shout out to Becky and Shane, because yesterday they hosted a Bring a Friend youth event, and it was a big success, and I think it helped out a lot of kids that we brought, and I am thankful for them opening up their house and letting a bunch of teenagers come in and mess around. So, with that being said, it is an honor to speak before you this morning. This is my first Sunday morning sermon, so bear with me as we go along a little bit, but I prepared a sermon, and it's opened my eyes a little bit of things and changed my view on things. And originally I was going to have some archaeological evidences that help support the Bible and prove it true. But as I was researching Jericho, I got hooked with it, and so we're going to talk about Jericho. First this morning, we are going to be talking about looking at trusting God. Okay, we don't have slides. Cool. Then we'll look at some evidences that show Jericho is true, some actual archaeological evidences that show the walls really did come tumbling down. Then we're going to shift gears and talk a little bit about Rahab and the significance of her story. To begin, Jericho is a well-known story. I'm sure all of you have heard it, but I want to talk a little bit about it. So as they have crossed the Jordan, the Israelites have come upon Jericho, and God sends two spies within the city, and Rahab hides them from the king, and they hide in the wilderness for 3 days, and they march around the city for 7 days, and the walls come tumbling down, and Jericho goes in and takes the city. So I want to start with the significance of the walls of Jericho, because you never hear it's the wall of Jericho. It's because there was actually two, and I had a picture this morning that I was going to show you. But I wanted to describe the image of the walls and how they were built. So there was a 12 to 15 foot high retaining wall at the base of the hill that Jericho was built on. So that would be about as high as that, like the top of that blue sign there. Hey! There. So you can kind of see how there was a retaining wall built at the bottom, and then on top of that retaining wall sat a 20 to 26 foot high, 6 foot thick mud brick wall, and then there would be like a ramp up the slope, and then on top of that was another 20 to 26 foot high retaining wall at the crest of the hill, which would have reached about 46 feet high above ground level where the Israelites would have been marching around. Now, humanly speaking, these walls would have been impenetrable and fairly intimidating. And so inside the upper walls of the city, which would have been the upper wall at the crest of the city, there was about 6 acres of land. And going off an archaeological rule of thumb, we can estimate about 100 people per acre. So there's about 600 people living in the upper city wall. And then due to findings in excavations, we know that people lived in between the city walls on the slant. And it was an overflow from the city and off of the slum district. And so there was about 3 acres of land in between the city walls. So we have about 900 people who are citizens of Jericho living inside the city. And then people, Canaanites living in surrounding villages, would have fled into Jericho for safety during wartime. So we can imagine there's about 1,000 or a few thousand people in the walls when the Israelites would have marched. So you can imagine how intimidating this is. You've just trekked across the Jordan, and you come upon this huge, like, military fort with walls 46 feet high off the ground and thousands of people in there ready to defend the city. But the Israelites trusted God and proceeded anyway. And there's so many examples of trust in this story, whether it's the Israelites as a whole trusting God, or the spies trusting God, or Rahab trusting God. And I want to ask each and every one of you this morning, do you trust God in everything you do? And I know it's a Sunday morning. Yeah, we don't trust God. It's a good idea. Yeah. But when Monday rolls around and things don't necessarily go our way, are we really putting all of our trust in God? And I don't think we are all the time. And there will be ups and downs with that. But how does one even go about trusting God? So I have a few things I want to share about that. The first one would be prayer. As soon as you start feeling feelings of anxiety or worry or things you're not looking forward to, pray about it. And that's always worked for me. And it's amazed me that we can go to the Almighty Creator of the universe with anything and everything, and that He cares and will work it out for us. And will take care of us. Secondly, after you pray, you might be saying, well, I can't pray all the time. What am I going to do about that? So, secondly, it comes with an understanding that your thoughts are in a spiritual realm, and Satan has an influence over them. And Satan has the ability to put thoughts in your head that after you pray, those feelings of doubt will come right back and trouble you right after you pray. So you have to make a conscious effort to get that out and just take a deep breath and say, I talked to God about this, He's working it out for my good. Everything will be okay. And that might not be easy to do, because you can imagine the Israelites might have been thinking that. They might have been thinking, God, why can't you just send lightning to strike these people down? Wouldn't that be a lot easier than making me go through this, making me march around the city? Because to me, marching around the city seven times sort of sounds almost foolish. Like, I'm going to march around the city and blow trumpets and almost embarrass myself. There's people yelling from the walls, making fun of me as I'm marching around the city. And I picture the Israelites going, man, this is a hot, long walk. Is he even going to save us anyway? And a lot of times, don't we do that as we're wondering with our prayer life with God? But no matter how many doubts they might have had walking around those city walls, they still got up the next morning and marched around the walls. No matter how much doubt they had trust. And because of that trust, the walls fell down. And God wants you to trust him the same way the Israelites trusted him. And when the Israelites trusted him, the walls came tumbling down. And when you let go and trust God in your life, the walls in your life and the barriers in your life will begin to fall down just as they did for the Israelites. All right, now I want to jump back into the story a little bit and talk about some evidences that were found at Jericho and backup claims made in Scripture. So I'd like everybody to turn to Joshua 6, verses 17 through 19. Joshua 6, verses 17 through 19. The city shall be under the ban. It and all that is in it belongs to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot and all those who were with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers who were sent. But as for you, only keep yourselves from the things under the ban, so that you do not covet them. And take some of the things under the ban, and make the camp of Israel cursed and bring trouble in it. But all the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord, and they shall go to the treasury of the Lord. So here we see God puts a ban of what could have been, or what was taken within the city of Jericho. And excavations have found full jars of grain, which is a testament to the Israelites' ability to trust God and keep what he said to them. Because grain was a commodity back in that day, almost like a currency. It was traded. And so it was a very valuable resource, and they found ridiculous amounts of grain. The Bible also claims that the walls of Jericho fell in 7 days, whereas scholars believe it would have taken years or months to subdue a city that well fortified with that much water. Because if we turn to Joshua 3:15, in the latter part of that verse, in parentheses, it says, "For the Jordan overflows all its banks all the days of the harvest." So now we know this is just after harvest, and Jericho has all of its grain and all of its food, so it's fully, completely fortified, and that's why all of this grain is found. And the fact that the jars were full when they were found shows that the walls fell relatively quickly after harvest, that the people of Jericho did not have time to consume the grain. So I want everybody to turn to Joshua 6, verse 20. So the people shouted, and the priests blew the trumpets, and when the people heard the sound of the trumpets, the people shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight ahead, and they took the city. There's two words that I want you to see here. It says the Israelites ran up into the city, and that the walls fell flat. Which is interesting, because the walls did fall flat. They didn't fall from one side or the other. They caved down in on themselves and fell flat. Now, due to the retaining wall that would have been on the base of the outer wall, it would have fallen over and formed a ramp for the Israelites to indeed run up into the city. Which is interesting to me, how two tiny words like that can make all the difference as to proving things that have been found in Jericho and proving the claims true that the Bible makes. That the walls did indeed fall flat on themselves, and the Israelites ran up into the city. So I want everybody to flip up. So we talked about some of the smaller details that are in certain verses, like little tiny words like that make all the difference. We talked about the amount of grain that was found, and the fact that it was found because any other conquering city would have taken that grain because it was valuable. I want us to turn to Joshua 4:2. Verses 14 through 16, and now we're going to take a little bit about Rahab. Joshua 2, verses 14 to 16. So the men said to her, "Our lives for your life,
if you do not tell this business of ours, and it shall come about when the Lord gives us the land that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall, so that she was living on the wall. She said to them, go to the hill country so that your pursuers will not happen upon you, and hide yourselves there for 3 days until your pursuers return. Then afterward, you may go on your way. Interestingly enough, German excavations in the late 1910s found that a portion of the wall did not actually fall. And that is in this bottom right here, what this guy is pointing to, that's called Rahab's house. That's a portion of the outer wall that did not actually fall, and it coincidentally is the closest point from Jericho to any part of the wilderness surrounding, the closest point A to point B. So it would have made sense for her to tell the spies to run into the wilderness. And it was also located on the outer city wall, which would have been the most dangerous during wartime and not good real estate. It would have been an overflow from the top of the city. And given being what she was, a harlot, it would have made sense for her to be living in this type of place. So we see how the Bible claims that Rahab and her story, how she sent the spies out. And it makes sense for her to send spies out to the wilderness because she's the closest house to them. It would have made sense for her to live there. We talked about the grain a little bit. We talked about certain little verses. Now we're going to change gears a little bit and talk about Rahab. But stay with Jericho and Rahab. Just not evidences as much. So, these houses out on the outer city of the wall would have made like mini gateways instead of using the main gateway. So people would have passed through these a lot, and gossip gets around, as it does now. And so it would have gotten back to the king that Rahab had let two spies into her house. And as we know, she hides the spies, and that's why she's saved from destruction. Interestingly enough, about the rope, in Joshua 2:15, it says, then she let them down by a rope. Here the word translated to Hebrew is shevel, which has a few interesting translations. And it can be translated as pain and sorrow, not only as rope. And it can also be translated as destruction, which is kind of interesting considering what's coming for Jericho. But then when she tells them, when she lets the rope down the second time after the 3 days, it is now red, and it is now translated as the word tikvah. And tikvah can be translated not only as cord, but as things hoped for or hope itself. And I thought this was very symbolic. And part of the reason the Bible is so convincing to me is it has these symbolic threads that run through it. And this is one of them to me, because this is similar to Passover, how the red rope made the destruction pass over Rahab's house, how the lamb, the blood of the lamb, made God pass over those houses in Egypt, and how Jesus' blood allows us to be passed over when we are destructed. And interestingly enough, Shevel actually turns up a couple times in Job for being sorrow and the pain and destruction. And so it's a cool analogy, because before the spies left, Rahab had no hope. She was gone. She was going to be destructed with the city. She had no hope, and she was what that word could be translated as. But when they come back after those 3 days, now she has hope and things to look forward to. And I've always wondered, why sit there for 3 days? I think it's very symbolic how Jesus was in the grave for 3 days. Because before Jesus rose from the grave, we were dead. We were headed for destruction. And we were in pain and sorrow. And then afterwards, his blood saves us. And now we have hope and things to hope for. And I think that's a very cool connection that the Israelites might have not made at the time. But looking back, we can see these similarities and common threads. And I don't think you can make that up over 1,500 years with 40 different authors. Rahab is also significant within the story of Jericho, because once, after she was saved from the destruction of Jericho, she went on to marry a guy named Salmon, who scholars believe was probably one of the spies sent in that she hid. They went on to have a kid named Boaz. You probably heard of that guy. He's pretty famous. Then she went on to marry an enemy of the Israelites, actually, a Moab, Ruth. And they went on to have a kid named Jesse, who became the father of the King David, a man after God's own heart, making Rahab a man, or the great-grandfather of King David. Now, I did not know this prior to researching. I think this is the coolest thing ever. And that God can take, I mean, we're talking about Rahab, the harlot, Rahab living in the poorest part of that town. Rahab would have been looked down upon for what she was in society. That Rahab becomes the great-grandmother of King David. And not only that, that Rahab becomes mentioned in Jesus' genealogy. She's one of four women to be mentioned in Jesus' genealogy. That's pretty significant. She paves the way for Gentiles to be saved because she traveled with the Israelites after Jericho had been destructed, and she wasn't a Jew. So God uses her to pave the way for all of us to be saved, including Gentiles. And she's significant enough to be praised in Hebrews 11:31 and James 2:25. And we're going to go read those now. First, in Hebrews 11:31, by faith Rahab the harlot did not perish, along with those who were disobedient, after she had welcomed the spies in peace. And that's to James 2:25. In just the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she was received the messengers and sent them out another way? So James and Hebrews were written in the latter part of the first century, which is post 600 years post Jericho, and it's post Christ's crucifixion. So all of this stuff is going on. The church is still trying to figure itself out. Apostles are being martyred and being persecuted. The church is still trying to survive and figure itself out. So there's a lot of stuff to still talk about with Jesus, and yet Rahab is significant enough to mention and be praised for 600 years afterwards with all of that still going on. And it just doesn't make sense to me. How does that Rahab go from such a low to such a high? It doesn't make any sense. But you know what? God can use anyone, and he does use anyone. No matter how big or small your faith is, no matter where you came from, what your background is, what you look like, God will use anyone and take you places that you never thought possible. And it's a personal relationship with God that does that. So I want to ask each and every one of you personally this morning, are you willing to trust God in your life? And are you willing to allow him to take you places that you never thought possible? Because I guarantee Rahab never thought she could do that. If you want a personal relationship with Jesus and see God move in your life for his glorification and the furtherness of his kingdom, if so, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.